You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO at 100.5 FM.
At the end of the summer, members of the activist group Fire This Time, Movement for Social Justice, were handing out copies of their newspaper at the Metrotown SkyTran station. Despite being in a common area of the station, the group was harassed and subsequently arrested and released without charge by transit police. The BC Civil Liberties Association is challenging TransLink on this incident as a repression of freedom of expression as provided by the Charter of Rights and Freedom. Michael Vaughan is the BC CLA Policy Director, and she joins me now to give us some of the details. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning.
Tell us what happened on that day that when the people were handing out newspapers and were arrested.
Well, you won't be surprised to hear some of the facts are in dispute, but as we understood it, the group that was handing out the political newspaper, Fire This Time, was arrested, and by arrested I mean apprehended. Their materials were confiscated on the basis that they were distributing these within the area of TransLink that is governed by their rules, which says that there's no distribution of merchandise or printed material except, and one of the exceptions is if the materials are non-commercial. So non-commercial materials can be distributed, and so the interaction with the police, with security and police, is unclear in terms of who said what and what was alleged, etc. But we certainly know that the apprehensions were made, although no charges were filed. The confiscations occurred. And on the basis of that alone, we had concerns about TransLink. This is not the first time that TransLink has had some difficulties appreciating the freedom of expression obligations it's under because of the Charter. We've gone to the Supreme Court of Canada on this question in the past on the basis of political advertising. So it certainly ignited our interest immediately because of the ostensible concerns about what exactly occurred in this interaction, but also the historical pattern of TransLink in this regard.
Well, let's talk about some of those things. Now, tell me about the rules that TransLink has with regard to distributing information. Are you allowed to go and distribute information about your organization or your political concerns?
Yes, you are. So here's the situation. TransLink has a series of rules, and if you actually get on the bus or whatever, you know, there's a tiny fine print rule sheet that you can sometimes see, and they include no distribution of merchandise or printed material except, so the exceptions include the distribution of printed material for non-commercial purposes is permitted. So non-commercial materials includes political speech. And this, I should say, obviously does not include being in the fair paid zones, etc. So this is in the common areas. And the idea is that there are concerns about not impeding the movement of passengers, not hindering access to the ticket vending machines, those kinds of things. So that's pretty standard in terms of making sure that you're not obstructing the flow. Nevertheless, standard brochuring, pamphleteering, etc., does none of those things if you're considerately positioned. So on a facial view, what you're dealing with is absolutely political speech is allowed to be distributed, to be voiced in the common areas if you're not creating an obstruction.
Now, you alluded to TransLink having a bit of a history of not recognizing the rights of people to have free speech in SkyTrain or other transit areas. Can you talk about some of those instances?
Yeah, and TransLink ended up being a very important player in the Supreme Court of Canada decision that essentially assessed. It didn't actually assess as much the free speech rights of people vis-a-vis TransLink as to the more the question and the legal question was what constitutes government for the purposes of the Charter being applicable. The Charter applies to government actions, government practice, government policy. It doesn't apply to private citizens. So, you know, you have no freedom of speech rights vis-a-vis a citizen, You know, your neighbor can deny your free speech rights on his or her property, etc. But government must abide by the charter. So the question was, at the Supreme Court of Canada case, is the TransLink authority allowed to prevent political advertising in its buses? So it's the paid advertising. And you may remember that the Student Federation was running a campaign called Rock the Vote, trying to get young people out to vote. And although there was no partisanship involved, it wasn't rock the vote and go vote for X, it was just get out and engage your franchise in a democracy, they deemed it political advertising and denied them the ability to buy the advertising space. They said this is against our policy of political advertising. Political advertising, obviously, or political speech, including advertising, at the very core of why we protect freedom of expression in Canada. And so the question of whether or not they were allowed to do that under the Charter became essentially a question about their argument, which was, we're not bound by the Charter because we're not government for the purposes. We're TransLink. We're under a different corporate kind of governance authority. We're, you know, very much at arm's length from government. And what the court found, which was very important consideration, is they said you really can't contract out of your governmental obligations. So the formula, it's a formula where you look at all kinds of governance structures, et cetera, who essentially has the effective control. But that's a very important ruling because, again, if you could contract out of your governmental obligations to uphold the charter, then the more government becomes increasingly, as we're seeing, privatized, the less space we have for the exercise of our rights. So this was an important ruling, and TransLink was part of it, but they were part of it because they actually were denying people's ability to express themselves politically within that space.
Now, you've taken a keen interest in this case. What's the course of action that you can take on this matter?
Well, you know, where we're at right now is on October the 5th, we received a letter from TransLink in its buses. So it's the paid advertising. And you may remember that the Student Federation was running a campaign called Rock the Vote, trying to get young people out to vote. And although there was no partisanship involved, it wasn't rock the vote and go vote for X, it was just get out and engage your franchise in a democracy, they deemed it political advertising and denied them the ability to buy the advertising space. They said this is against our policy of political advertising. Political advertising, obviously, or political speech, including advertising, at the very core of why we protect freedom of expression in Canada. And so the question of whether or not they were allowed to do that under the Charter became essentially a question about their argument, which was, we're not bound by the Charter because we're not government for the purposes. We're TransLink. We're under a different corporate kind of governance authority. We're, you know, very much at arm's length from government. And what the court found, which was very important consideration, is they said you really can't contract out of your governmental obligations. So the formula, it's a formula where you look at all kinds of governance structures, et cetera, who essentially has the effective control. But that's a very important ruling because, again, if you could contract out of your governmental obligations to uphold the charter, then the more government becomes increasingly, as we're seeing, privatized, the less space we have for the exercise of our rights. So this was an important ruling, and TransLink was part of it, but they were part of it because they actually were denying people's ability to express themselves politically within that space.
Now, you've taken a keen interest in this case. What's the course of action that you can take on this matter?
Well, you know, where we're at right now is on October the 5th, we received a letter from TransLink that said, here's what we've done about your concerns, because we wrote to them and said, this needs to be investigated. And what they've said is that they have voluntarily referred the matter to the Office of the Police Complaints Commissioner for investigation. Although the people involved did not themselves file a complaint, so they tell us, with the Office of the Police Complaints Commissioner, TransLink itself has referred the matter to them for an investigation. So that is helpful. According to TransLink, what they say happened here is that the transit police were acting in good faith because they believed the publication was commercial in nature, so did not comply with the rules, because it contained advertising and could be sold for a dollar, as indicated on the front cover. That's their version of what happened. And they say that transit police engaged in extensive dialogue with the people distributing the publication, and it was only after reasonable efforts at negotiations that they felt it was necessary as a last resort to take them into custody and remove them from the station. This is going to be very much the subject of dispute, I suspect, with the people who were distributing the matters, the publications. And so they will have a chance in the investigation of the Office of the Police Complaints Commissioner to explain their version of this. Now, you may know when you make a police complaint, part of what is the way the system works is that the onus or the burden of proof is on the people who are making the complaint. So quite often when you end up in these, he said over here and she said over here, scenarios, one person says X, one person says Y, sometimes merely on the fact that the complainant has the onus or the burden of proof, if there's all things being equal, then the complaint won't be substantiated. In this case, it will be interesting to see what happens, because I do believe there was some video footage that will arguably be something that the commissioner will be interested in looking at, and also potentially other witnesses. Who might be able to corroborate some of the allegations that were made by the people whose materials were seized. Why the materials had to be seized is another question. As they put it in the letter, the materials, and they apologized for this, they said that they were in possession of the transit police and were recycled. They were disposed of is the story, and they apologize for that. Again, that seems to be a big question mark, why they would have found as any such thing necessary if they were operating in good faith is certainly a question mark, perhaps in some people's minds. So we're not at a very satisfactory place with getting an end result on this, but the process is underway, and that's the best we can hope for at this juncture.
Michael, do you think that this particular incident points to a larger issue about what we're able to do in what should be public spaces?
Yeah, absolutely. There's the issue that relates to TransLink when you say, well, whatever happened here, since we are in a position that the transit police are conceded to have been wrong, whether they acted in good faith or not, that speaks to the question of, well, what kind of training are they getting relative to their obligations under the charter and how to interpret the rules in a way that values, that upholds the values of the charter. So that's one question. But yes, this other question of, the whole fact that we had to go to the Supreme Court of Canada to figure out whether or not public transit is any longer public space is indicative of the concerns that we have that not only are we having to fight these battles, but that the actual terrain, the topography for freedom of speech is becoming constrained. We saw this during the Olympics where all kinds of, clearly public space was under massive pressure due to the corporate interests of the Olympics sponsors, etc., encroached upon in hugely important ways and had to be fought every inch to create some kind of forum for political speech at that event, all of which is occurring on the basis of public taxpayers' money. I mean, this is obviously government. So how these things are pushing against what we consider to be the commons for public speech. These are small pebbles in this increasing mound of concerns we have about what kind of arena for political expression, but all kinds of expression people effectively have that is, we're constantly having to fight for it. And like I say, the whole incursion of what the privatization movement is creating a huge obstacle to people exercising their rights in ways that they're confident about. It's one thing to say, hey, we can go to the courts and maybe get some kind of ruling that will clarify this. But people need to be confident that when they're handing out brochures and they see the security guard come in their direction, that they actually know what their rights are. We don't want to go to the courts. We don't want to go to the Office of the Police Complaints Commissioner to settle up these things. People should be confident in the first place, or else there's a tremendous chill on people's ability to exercise their rights.
Well, I really appreciate your telling us about this morning. That's great. Thank you, Michael.
You're very welcome.
I was speaking with Michael Vaughn. She's the policy director at the BC Civil Liberties Association. And to learn more about this case, you can visit their website at bccla.org.